Thank you. I'm going to be talking with you today about the influences of contextual stressors on adolescent marijuana use in a sample of African Americans living in an urban area. And I think this fits in nicely with some of the other talks, in particular the first talk that Eric gave. This study was funded by the National Institute of Drug Abuse. I'd like to recognize my co-authors, Nick Iolongo, who's at Johns Hopkins University, where the data were collected, and Carrie Green. For some reason, I don't have PhD next to her name, but she's on the faculty at the University of Maryland. I have no relationships to disclose, nor do the co-authors. So, as Eric told you in the beginning, and I'm going to be showing some of the same data he showed, marijuana use is the most illicit drug in the United States today, and it now actually exceeds the rate of cigarette use among adolescents. If you look at the most recent data from Monitoring the Future survey, rates of marijuana use are almost double that of rates of cigarette use in the past month for 8th and 10th graders, and it's significantly higher in 12th grade as well. So why are we concerned about this? We know that there's lots of increasing evidence to show that marijuana use results in adverse health effects, particularly when marijuana use initiation occurs in adolescents. There's actually a nice review by Nora Volkov, who's the director of NIDA, that came out in the 2014 in the New England Journal of Medicine, if you're interested. Does a great job of summarizing the current state of the literature and where the gaps are. And we know that starting to use marijuana in adolescents is associated with an increased risk of addiction. About 9% of people who experiment with marijuana become addicted. Those who begin as teenagers, about 1 in 6 become addicted. We also have increasing evidence that it's associated with cognitive impairments. Of course, the brain is going through a lot of development during adolescence, and we've seen some evidence to show that this results in lower IQ in adulthood, poor educational outcomes like school dropout, poorer grades, lower lifetime achievement in adulthood, having less income, being involved in the criminal justice system, etc. So these are serious concerns, these adverse consequences for developing adolescents. And in particular, they're serious concerns for urban-dwelling African-American adolescents, which is what I'm going to talk about today, because they often face other vulnerabilities in adolescence that hinder their ability to successfully transition to adulthood. So before 1990, whites historically had higher rates of marijuana use than African Americans. But in the 1990s, this trend sort of reversed, and particularly due to increasing rates of marijuana use among young African Americans. And if you look at recent national studies, you'll find that African American, for example, male high school students have the highest rate of current marijuana use compared to all other racial, ethnic, and gender groups. Also, if you look at the National Household Survey on drug use and health, rates of marijuana use are higher for African Americans age 12 and older than whites. Unfortunately, there's limited research on the epidemiology of marijuana use among African American adolescents, and there's even less research on neighborhood and contextual factors that might be more relevant or salient for this community. Lots of the research has focused on individual level factors that we know are important for whites, but there's limited research looking at factors that might be more important for African Americans. So what do we know? We know that African American youth disproportionately reside in urban neighborhoods with high levels of neighborhood disorder. Neighborhoods with high levels of disorder, there's often an inability to monitor and maintain social control over youth activities in the neighborhood. There's often a lot of illegal behaviors. There's low levels of collective efficacy. There's a lack of trust and solidarity among neighbors, their willingness to intervene on behalf of the larger community. In severe cases, the law of the streets will often prevail over the will of the residents. So in these neighborhoods, what happens is you tend to see a lot of increased exposure to drug activity for these youth and reinforcement of positive drug use norms. African-American adolescents also rate their communities as more violent, and they tend to have higher rates of victimization than whites. And we know that these exposures are related to both increased levels of internalizing symptoms, such as depression, as well as externalizing symptoms that may manifest itself in terms of aggression. So these youth may be using drugs as a means of coping with stress or an increased affiliation with deviant and drug-using peers if they're exhibiting externalizing symptoms. We also know that African Americans report that discriminatory experiences are common in their daily lives. This can result in increased symptoms of distress, poor self-worth, and self-esteem. It also sometimes manifests in terms of externalizing behaviors and anger and delinquency. So again, drugs may be used as a coping mechanism. So what were our study objectives? We wanted to identify stages of marijuana involvement during adolescence in a community sample of primarily low-income African Americans living in an urban area. We wanted to examine the probability of transitioning between stages of marijuana involvement from 6th through 9th grade, so during adolescence, and we wanted to investigate the influence of contextual stressors on these transitions. So the data I'm going to show you today are from a community-based longitudinal study conducted at Johns Hopkins University Baltimore Prevention Research Center. This is the original study population consisted of 798 children and families, representative of students entering first grade in the Baltimore County public school system in 1993. Interventions were provided in first grade, and they targeted early learning and aggression. It was just a one-time intervention in first grade. Annual assessments were conducted in first through third grades. Due to a funding gap, there was no follow-up in fourth and fifth grades. But then there was funding that started again in sixth grade, and parental consent was obtained to follow them in sixth grade through high school. And during that time, youth were asked about their experiences using drugs. And we're still following this cohort today. I believe they just finished the age 26 assessment, so this is an ongoing study. But I'm just going to report on the adolescent data today. So 678 of the original 798 were African-American adolescents. 556 of them had at least one assessment during adolescence that made them available for this analysis. About half were male, and 70% received free or reduced price lunch in sixth grade. So more than two-thirds were receiving free or reduced price lunch, which is an indicator of low SES. So the behaviors that we looked at were these behaviors of marijuana involvement. Had they ever been offered marijuana? Did they have the opportunity to use it? Had they been offered drugs? Had they ever used marijuana? Had they used it more than just a couple of times? Did they have social problems associated with marijuana use? And these were things like, had a friend told you shouldn't be using marijuana? Did you get into trouble at school? Have you gotten into trouble at home for using marijuana? Health problems included things like having a lasting cough from your marijuana use. So you can see that in sixth grade, only 16% of youth have ever been offered marijuana, but by ninth grade, that goes up to 61%. And while only 5% were using marijuana in sixth grade, it goes up to 35% in ninth grade. And then, you also see that as marijuana use is going up, so is frequency of use and problems associated with use. So what we did was we used a longitudinal latent class analysis because we wanted to examine the structure underlying these five marijuana involvement behaviors in sixth through ninth grade. And latent class analysis, as I'm sure many of you are familiar, assumes that these behaviors co-occur because they can be explained by an underlying classification of youth into different classes with similar patterns of behavior. And these common patterns of behavior might represent different stages of marijuana use. So you have these five behaviors, you have a pattern, different patterns, and we're trying to determine the smallest number of classes that would adequately describe these patterns. So the best fitting model was a three-class model, and you can see that the first class is kids who have no involvement with marijuana. They haven't even been offered marijuana, and that starts out at about 84%. Which is kind of consistent with what we saw in the observed data. And by ninth grade, only 39% are in the class that have no involvement with marijuana. The second class are kids who have been offered marijuana, and only a small proportion have actually used it. And then the third class, I'll refer to as our use and problems class. So these are kids that, of course, have been offered marijuana, have used it, Almost all of them have reported one social problem associated with their marijuana use, and about 40-45% have used it more than a couple of times and are experiencing some health problems from their use. So next, we performed a latent transition analysis. So once we determined how many underlying stages or classes we had, we want to look at transitioning across those stages from 6th to 9th grade, and then looking at how contextual stressors and environment would influence those transitions. And so we use latent transition analysis, which models things in a multinomial logistic regression framework. But first, we just looked at the transition probabilities themselves. Here, we look at the probability of transitioning from 6th to 7th grade, 7th to 8th, and 8th to 9th. If you look at the 0.844, it says that would say that 84.4% of youth who are in the have no involvement with marijuana in 6th grade also have no involvement in 7th grade. And what you can see is that over time, the probability of transitioning from no use to being offered marijuana increases, as we would expect, and the probability of transitioning rapidly within the course of a year from no use to use and problems also goes up. So 5.3% going from 6th to 7th grade, and then up to 9.6% 8th to 9th grade. In terms of those youth who have been offered marijuana and then transitioning at one time point and then the next time point transitioning to use and problems, that's actually highest between 6th and 7th grades, and then dips down from 7th to 8th. It goes from 0.269 to 0.181 and then goes back up again on the transition from 8th to 9th grade, which may represent entry to middle school, where youth who are being offered marijuana are actually seizing that opportunity and transitioning to use, and then again at entry to high school. So next we wanted to see how contextual factors would influence these transitions, and we looked at several measures. We looked at the neighborhood environment scale, which is a series of true-false questions about neighborhood safety, violent crime, and drug use and sale in the neighborhoods. And we used three subscales representing each of these factors, which was based on a factor analysis. The safety measure asked things like, do you feel safe walking alone in your neighborhood at night? Have you seen people get the violent crime one? Asked questions about, have you seen people get beat up in your neighborhood? The drug use and sales, have you seen people selling drugs in your neighborhood? So we used each of those subscales. Then the neighborhood disadvantage index has been used by many folks. It uses data from the census, and it looks at the prevalence of poverty in the neighborhood and the proportion of mother-only households relative to the prevalence of home ownership and college-educated residents, and it looks at the census tract level. We also looked at the children's report of violence exposure. This is a self-report measure of witnessing or being a victim of violence in your community. And then the racism and life experiences scale. So these are the results. We see that, adjusted odds ratios are adjusting for gender, whether or not they were in the intervention in first grade, and whether or not they were receiving free or reduced price lunch. And these are actually univariate models. Each of these factors were looked at separately. Obviously, some of them are highly correlated and represents different subscales. So what we see is that in terms of predicting transitions from no use to being offered marijuana, community violence exposure and racial discrimination were both predictive. And when we look at going directly from no use to use and problems over the course of 1 year, actually all of our factors were statistically significant, except for neighborhood safety, which was not significant for any of these transitions. And then finally, predicting transitions from offered to use and problems, so seizing an opportunity to use marijuana when you're given that opportunity, seeing more drug activity in your neighborhood, and being exposed to violence in your community were significantly predictive. So summary of our findings, we saw that opportunities and rates of initiation increased from 6th to 9th grade. We saw that seizing an opportunity to use marijuana was greatest during the transition to middle, both middle and high school. This could be due to challenges of increased academic rigor at those time points, as well as the social demands. We saw that youth who have been a victim of violence or witnessed violence in the community or experienced racial discrimination were more likely to transition from no involvement to being offered marijuana. We know that both of these experiences have been linked with externalizing behaviors, anger, and delinquency, which in turn might provide them with more opportunities to use marijuana through affiliation with delinquent or drug-using peers. All of our contextual stressors, except neighborhood safety, were associated with transitioning from no involvement to marijuana use and problems. And this may again be due to a coping mechanism or increased availability of drugs and reinforcing drug using norms in these neighborhoods. Given the opportunity to use drugs, youth living in neighborhoods with higher levels of drug activity were more likely to transition to use. Again, this could be an increased exposure to reinforcing drug using norms, and youth who were exposed to violence or victimization were also more likely to transition and seize that opportunity, which again could be due to their increased externalizing and risk-taking behaviors. So what are the significance of our findings? So with the rates of marijuana use in young African Americans now exceeding rates in whites, new understandings of the course of marijuana use and the influence of factors that are more salient in this population are critical to the development of effective and culturally appropriate prevention programs. This study, we think, offers insight into both the timing of intervention programs, so entry to middle school and high school, and the audience, youth in disorganized, violent neighborhoods with high rates of drug trafficking. We believe that reducing exposure to drug activity and violence in high-risk urban neighborhoods may be the first step to potentially halt increasing rates of marijuana use among African Americans.